Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, as you've been hearing, a commission of inquiry will be established by the government following the revelation that large numbers of children were abused in schools run by religious orders between the 1960s and the 1990s. Survivors described ferocious violence in an atmosphere of fear and terror, and almost 2,400 allegations made against 884 abusers were made. For reaction to this, I'm joined by Dr. James Gallen, who's Associate Professor in the School of Law and Government at Dublin City University, and first by Tom Dorley, columnist with the Sunday Times Ireland and author of Deny Everything, The Life and Crimes of Joseph Marmion, SJ. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Claire.
Now, I mentioned there that you wrote about Joseph Marmion, the priest who abused so many of your classmates in Belvedere College, as people will know, and you campaigned for justice for them. What is your reaction to this news now that there will be a statutory inquiry?
Well, I'm very pleased, Claire, and in fact, I'm pleasantly surprised in one way. I think there must be a lot of anxious clerical heads this morning because of the realization of what I suppose has been coming down the tracks, that they may be compelled to reveal what they've known, in many cases for decades, in which they've been concealing very carefully, or in some instances, drip-feeding acknowledgements out as to what happened, but generally only when absolutely forced by the threat of publicity to do so. I wonder, will it lead to some attempts to preempt the process? I'm thinking particularly of the Jesuit order, where we know there are 45 credibly accused since the 1940s. We know who three of those are by name, and that's largely because the Jesuits were forced to acknowledge them. The other 43, so far they have refused to name them for various reasons, citing, that it's in deference to these people's families, that the victims may be upset by it, and so on and so forth. So I'm rather hoping that Jesuits will recognise that, in that sense, the game is up, and that they're going to have to tell us what they know.
Well, and they will have to because of the statutory nature of this forthcoming inquiry. They'll be compelled to hand over that information.
Yeah. Yes. This is, of course, the difference. And I think it's what the orders have dreaded in many ways, because it blows open the culture of secrecy that has informed how they have acted, have always acted. And I think it will be very interesting to see what we do find out.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have been in contact with some of the victims and survivors. And what has the general chat been around this since the news emerged yesterday?
Well, I think it's been generally very, very positive. And, the fact is that many of these people have actually been seeking an acknowledgement of what happened to them for decades in some cases. With varying degrees of success. What this, I think we would tend to think of it as a sort of new broom that, as you say, will actually compel the orders to come clean about what they've known.
Mm-hmm. But the prospect of giving evidence to a statutory inquiry will be very difficult for many people who have been living with this, as you say, for decades.
Yes, this is something that concerns me. Nevertheless, I think, if it's a statutory inquiry with the legal powers that attach to that, we have to accept that it has to be interrogated forensically, I suppose would be the word. But I think we have to acknowledge that it could be very, very difficult for some people. Mm-hmm. And some, I have no doubt, will decline to be involved because of the trauma that they've been through. You know, it's not perfect, but it's certainly, you know, it's a move absolutely in the right direction.
And in terms of redress, Tom, I mean, how do you think any scheme should be structured now?
Well, it's interesting. The Jesuits introduced a very successful redress scheme for the victims of Marmion. It was non-confrontational. It was quick. And everybody I've spoken to who has taken advantage of that has been very pleased about it. So I think that could be used as some kind of model. And I think it's very, very important that we acknowledge that the people who have been most damaged by these dreadful experiences are absolutely the least able to deal with a confrontational kind of exercise when it comes to redress. I mean, obviously there has to be caution, there has to be some horse stealing between lawyers, but I think that has to be minimised, and we have to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it's a really valid point.
Yeah.
The people who have been mm-hmm. most damaged are least able to deal with confrontation.
Yeah. Who deserve the most in terms of compensation?
Clearly.
Not that anything compensates for what they've been through, you know.
So who pays, the state or the orders?
Oh, the orders, of course.
Mm-hmm. But there have been difficulties in the past in that regard.
Well,
I mean, you do mention the successful Jesuit scheme, but it's not.
Yeah.
It doesn't typify the experience that people have had.
No, it certainly doesn't. Well, you know, if the state can compel the orders to tell us what they know, it's certainly within their powers to compel them to cough up. And I think there would be no justice in any kind of redress scheme in which the taxpayer, the state, has to foot the bill for the crimes of organisations knowingly committed over many decades. Where would the justice in that be?
Well, thank you, Tom. That's Tom Dorley, columnist with the Sunday Times Ireland and author of that book, which is available on Substack. It's called Deny Everything, The Life and Crimes of Joseph Marmion, SJ. And Dr. James Gallen, Associate Professor in the School of Law and Government at DCU, has been listening to Tom there. Good morning, James.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
He wants the orders to pay, and he makes the point if the state can compel them to tell them what they know, they can surely compel them to pay in a redress scheme. Is he right?
I wish it were so. Sadly, there's no legal magic wand. We have a very strong protection of property rights in this country, arguably a stronger protection than we do of the rights of children, as we've seen with the scale of the abuse that's involved. So that's why ministers resort to moral pressure. We know there's great limits to that. As we've seen, moral pressure has been applied to the orders involved in the mother and baby homes context, and they so far have refused to make any voluntary contributions to that scheme. So I think it's incumbent on the government to go further and to extend the pressure to legal pressure through law reform. It's very difficult to sue a religious order in Ireland. They are unincorporated associations. Some orders have used that as a means to avoid even engaging in civil litigation. For non-recent cases, the statute of limitations is a problem, and costs on the legal system are very brutal for victims and survivors. We changed the law in the past to make it easier to sue for sexual abuse in the year 2000 in the context of reformatory and industrial schools. The Statute of Limitations Act, led by Micheál Martin, Minister of Education at the time, sought to increase access to justice. And I think that's very important, because when we look abroad at other redress schemes involving, in fact, some of the same religious organisations in other jurisdictions, we see they needed legal pressure to contribute to state schemes. So in Australia, they made law reform on foot of the Royal Commission into Child Abuse's recommendations. They made it easier to sue religious organisations. And lo and behold, those religious organisations then made voluntary contributions to a state-administered national redress scheme. So that it is possible to do it, but it's going to take legal change, and it's going to take the political will to effect that legal change.
So the moral argument coupled with legislative change can sometimes reap results.
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, you were right to indicate we're not entitled to rely on the virtue of these organizations in terms of their contribution to date, because, you know, the state and the taxpayer has picked up the majority of the redress bill in the 21st century. In the residential institution context, the religious organizations paid 13% of the bill. Taxpayer paid the full 100% of the bill in the Magdalen Laundry context, and it looks like we'll do the same in the mother and baby home context as well. So I think it's important that we have moral conversations about who's responsible and the relative contribution. But I think we also need to recognise the reality that, that's likely to be insufficient.
And James, you heard Tom there talking about the Jesuit scheme and using that as an example of one that worked because it wasn't confrontational and it was quick. But do we know how much orders have paid through schemes like that privately in the past? And do we need to know that figure?
We don't know. As a researcher, it's a figure I've been seeking for a number of years across different contexts. And I think it is very important that that inform this conversation. So the Jesuit scheme was public-facing to try and include as many survivors as possible. That was very welcome. But there's obviously a lot of private settlement or individual settlement that's gone on between relevant religious orders and individual victim survivors. And so the orders know what they've paid out, but that information is not publicly accessible. So if the taxpayer has been asked to go back into their pocket to contribute to redress on behalf of the state, I think we should do that armed with the knowledge of the relative contribution to date of the religious organisations. And that would inform then the ask and the morality of the ask that they're being put to to contribute to a future state scheme.
Now, redress isn't just about money. Supports and access to healthcare, they're so important as well, and counsellors too. And it's important to include that here as well as part of the ask for the survivors.
That's right. I mean, redress is a multifaceted concept. I think the central thing I would emphasise about redress is it's not about compensation. So it's not about putting someone in a position they were in before the event took place. That's an absurd idea in the context of child sexual abuse. Instead, the emphasis on in redress should be about acknowledgement. It should be about an acknowledgement of the failure on the part of the state and the part of the religious order to protect the rights of the child in these instances. We know from Louise O'Keefe's case going back to 2014 that the state has an obligation and had an obligation at the time to prevent harms taking place in national schools and that it had failed to do so in that case and based on the report yesterday has failed to do so on a widespread basis. So the language around redress, both the monetary form and the non-monetary forms, are really important. And again, in Australia, they emphasise that redress was about responsibility. They said redress is going to come with an individualised apology from both the state and or the relevant non-state organisation, and it's going to describe the responsibility of that actor and their failure to prevent the abuse taking place. Mm-hmm. So we have a national counselling service. It needs to be massively more resourced if it's going to deal with the scale of this problem. A trauma-informed approach to the commission of investigation or inquiry is going to need a lot of support across a range of disciplines to ensure survivors aren't re-traumatised in that process. So a really holistic package is needed, but I think the central feature of that has to be the victims and survivors here had rights. They have rights today, and those rights have been violated by virtue of the awful things that are detailed in that report, the failure to prevent them, and the knowledge and notice that both religious organisations and the state had about that abuse.
James, it's really good to talk to you, and I'm sure we'll speak again as this commission gets progresses and gets underway. But for the moment, that's Dr. James Gallen from DCU. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.